to me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to look behind WikiLeaks and reveal the real reason Julian Assange is being abandoned and will probably be arrested very shortly in Great Britain and sent to the United States, where he will be treated as a traitor. He is anything but. So a question I'm going to raise now, so you have a chance to think about it, and we will go to open calls, and I intentionally set aside time today not having a guest, so you'll have an opportunity to share your points of view. I'll hold mine until you've had a chance to talk to us. What has happened to us as a society when those who expose the lawbreakers are then considered a lawbreaker for exposing the real lawbreakers? So the real lawbreakers get away, nothing happens, and those who expose them go to prison, have their lives destroyed. What has happened to us? Because it's equal on the Democrat and Republican side. When you've looked at Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and John Kerry, and how they've treated Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden and all the others who've been challenged, and especially Julian Assange. How is justice served? And why hasn't then this been brought up by the mainstream media in any meaningful way? Why have there been no Me Too movements to free Julian Assange from, in effect, being in prison in the Ecuadorian embassy? That's one. A separate issue today I'd like for you to address. First, we're going to hear from Dr. Peter Bragan. Simple truths about the drugging of our children. I remember when I finished my documentary called The Drugging of Our Children, and no one wanted to air it. And the feedback I received was, well, it's not really an issue. It's on no one's important list. And then Dr. Joseph Marcola, unbeknownst to me, posted it on Google, and within 24 hours of all the millions of videos, it was number one. So there's a lot of people who want to know about why our children are being medicated, over-medicated, diagnosed, over-diagnosed, frequently with conditions that do not exist in actual science. And yet we've done absolutely, positively nothing to stop it, to understand it, or to correct it. The over-medicating of our society, starting with our children. And then there's a person in Utah that is in trouble because of a law that they say she broke. I'll play it, then you can decide for yourself. Now, if there's time beyond that, that depends upon how many people call in, I'm going to share some insights from Eric Zeus from Countercurrents on why this planet is becoming uninhabitable. Then Libya, 7 years on, a shame for the West, Timothy Bancroft Hinchey from Pravda Report. And then America's permanent war complex. Eisenhower's worst nightmare has come true as defense mega contractors climb into the cockpit to ensure we stay overextended. Garth Porter from the American Conservative. So we have these as to share also. I know we won't get many of them in, but I always want to hear what you have to say. We have an extraordinarily articulate, insightful, sensitive, and intelligent audience. So it's your turn. And on Thursday of this week, the entire hour from beginning to end is going to be your opportunity to talk on these important issues. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing. And by the way, Richard Gale, one of our scholars and residents, and myself have spent more than 12,000 hours researching on the environment and writing. And you talk about being in an extraordinarily, let's say, prolific time. Yesterday I added our fifth or sixth article just in this new series over the last 4 weeks. And these are very comprehensive, insightful articles. please download them, read them, and share them with everyone you can. The same is true about our latest articles on vaccines and their worthlessness, the flu vaccine, the sham that there's no science supporting its efficacy or safety. Share them. And of course, we're now up to 15 articles all told on Wikipedia and raising questions about, if you knew the truth, which we expose, would you trust anything? Would you ever go to Wikipedia, knowing what we know? I wouldn't. And I believe it's time that congressional investigations go into all the what we consider and have exposed and documented challenge to their charter, challenge to their nonprofit status. Share these articles far and wide. Portland State University came up with some research and found in their laboratory experiment vitamin D is one of the nutrients that can create a whole new gear in life's clock, meaning it can extend the lifespan if we have enough of it, and it works against us if we don't. So I think that's important. I won't go into the whole study. I'll just say that their laboratory research shows vitamin D is so important because vitamin D synthesis and signaling promotes normal development of the biochemistry. It can be great at protecting you, especially with the flu. And a new study shows that quercetin also has anti-flu properties. Well, vitamin C, echinacea, and astragalus also. Wild oregano oil and bee propolis also. Pau d'arco also. So we have so many good things that can help us. But when it comes to vitamin D, it is adaptogenic, meaning it works on our behalf, helping the immune system and helping your biochemistry. From University of College London, published in the International Journal of Pharmaceuticals, there is new research on how live probiotics can rebalance your gut microbiome and modify your immune system response. So in lay language, what this means is this new research demonstrates that the good bacteria in the live probiotic form can successfully reach and colonize the gut, where they can go on to change the existing gut flora. They can also modify our immune systems, meaning our immune system is now stronger, better able to deal with any pathogen. So that's good news. That means that when you have some sauerkraut or tempeh or a cup of miso soup, or when you're having some dairy or non-dairy yogurts, you're recolonizing the good bacteria, and that's terrific for you. We now have about the same number, more or less, of baby boomers to millennials, about 70 million. And there's a different mindset. There was a different enculturation process. When I was growing up as a baby boomer, and I'm sure many of you, your family was very important because they could always be relied upon. They guided you where you had no knowledge. They provided wisdom and insight, at least the best they could. And then you were given the tools you needed, generally through a public education. But if you were fortunate enough or smart enough, you got scholarships and went to a private school. Same quality education, but the perception was different. And then you went out, and more often than not, you either started a family, got married, and continued into a job where you were expected to stay for the rest of your life. And there were three jobs for every applicant. So you had a lot of opportunity. And things were reasonable. And we didn't have debt, and we didn't have credit cards, and we didn't have cell phones, and we didn't have computers, and we didn't have chat rooms, and we didn't have comfort rooms. We didn't have people in class having to forewarn us by handing out signs that said, in the next 5 minutes, I may say something that will cause you to feel uncomfortable, in which case you can go next door, hug a teddy bear, have a psychologist do reflexology on your feet, and we'll have a yoga come in and massage your temple, all while your helicopter parents helicopter in, sit on the roof, and gaze into the window. Is my darling, perfect, flawless child comfortable? Damn. We didn't have that. That's unfortunate. So, we come from two completely diametrically opposing points of view when it comes to enculturation, growth, things that are not even discussed today, such as strength of character. Merit growth, meaning don't just show up and expect to be rewarded. Are you actually doing something that shows that you deserve an opportunity? What do you mean deserve an opportunity? Everybody deserves the same opportunity for everything in life, and we should all be rewarded equally. Okay, fair enough. I absolutely agree with that. It is so politically correct. God, you must be listening, reading The Nation magazine, and listening to Democracy Now. Wow, how could anyone else disagree with you? So let's do this. As of tomorrow, anyone who wants to teach can teach, even if they're functional illiterate. Anyone who wants to go to Juilliard must be allowed in and then must be allowed to play in any orchestra. Anyone who wants to be a ballerina can be, even if you can't walk straight, because nobody wants to deprive you of anything based upon merit. Everything is identity. Anybody can publish a book. Therefore, we don't need agents. We don't need editors. Because to alter anything you've written would be to, in some way, abuse your intellectual sensitivities. We don't need Maxwell Perkins, the great editor who made dozens of writers famous because he took their gem of an idea and the garbage of their writing style, and they made it perfect. We don't need these people. So however inarticulate you are, you should have the same opportunity to be a guest speaker, a keynote speaker. And you should be paid the same as Barack Obama, $400,000 a lecture. Anybody who wants to play on any sports team should be allowed to. And at no time should you have to prove that you have value and can actually compete. Baseball, hockey. Anyone who wants to make a film, Hollywood should open its doors to anyone. You don't need to train people. Their parents will tell you, don't mess with my kid. They're perfect. Everything they need to do, they have already in them. You just give them the opportunity. Okay. So you see, there's always another side to the equation. Are we honest enough to even look for the other side, or are we so locked into identity politics and feel good, absolutely voidless euphemism and doublespeak that we forget what it is to grow up with some values, merit, and determinations? Or are we on a perpetual human pseudo-spiritual trampoline? It doesn't matter what we do, there's going to be someone who's going to apologize, defend, or make sure that we don't feel bad about our mistakes. So we never have to say, I'm sorry. That brings me to the Max Planck Institute. What they call the boomeranging back to a parent's home negatively affects young adults' mental health. Quote, the number of young adults living in their own household has dropped dramatically in the last decades in the United States for a number of economic and social reasons. In a study to be published in the peer-reviewed journal Society of Mental Health, researchers investigated the effects of moving back home after a period of independence on young adults' mental health. The researchers found that young adults who boomeranged back to a parental home experienced an increase in depressive symptoms. Recent estimates from the Pew Research Center shows that the United States adults age 18 to 34 are now more likely to live with their parents than independently or with a partner. And only 31% of young adults in this age group lived in their own households. And in 1960, it was 62% lived independently. And the main reasons for this change are setbacks and delays in achieving economic security and forming families. And full-time, well-paying jobs are scarce for young people, and those available require increasingly longer schooling. So the American ideal of early independence has become increasingly difficult to achieve, particularly since the Great Recession, 2008. Other research shows that young adults were particularly hard hit by the Great Recession. They have increasingly relied upon parents for help defraying financial hardships, including by living with them. And it goes on to talk about the consequences. I'd like your thoughts on that. I have my own. All of us who are parents know that there is no straight up or straight down trajectory in life, in our relationships, in our health, in our attitudes, and certainly not economically, unless you're a trust baby. But those who actually live in the real world, outside of gated communities and outside of helicopter parents, know that there's cause and effect. Are we prepared for the hard lessons of life? Shouldn't we be teaching hard lessons of life in school? Shouldn't it be required curriculum? Shouldn't we teach people about death and dying, about suffering and war, about our interventions in other countries and what it means to their life and their future and their children's and their environment? Shouldn't we teach about the environment and where food comes from and not to take it for granted? Shouldn't we teach about, though we may want to live in a place, it doesn't mean we should be allowed to because it is destroying finite resources? Shouldn't we care about all people, not just those of our own class, ethnicity, and background, economic and social and cultural and educational standings? We tend to group together in identity politics, then slice and dice from there. I'm filming three major films as we speak. And we've done some really, what I would call, maximum effect interviews. I won't go further than that, except to say that these people have been left off everyone's care chart. No one's caring about them or their lives. And we're not talking about a few or a few hundred or a few thousand. We're talking about millions, tens of millions. So if you really want to know what the rest of America thinks and why they vote the way they do, why don't you actually sit and talk with them? I know it's so much easier to go on a Pacifica Good Life board where a bunch of raving idiots who know nothing about life but are in contempt of any conversation that doesn't agree with them, they live to fight. They live to inflict suffering upon others, to demean and deny. And that is spread out into our entire internet world where armies of bots can inflict 100,000 negative statements about a person in the blink of an eye. And that's where a lot of people get their information and inspiration. That's unfortunate. Because none of it's real. It's disconnected from the real world. It may only reflect that closed box of mirrors that they live in. The cube of minimalist existence, minimalist intellectually, minimalist non-existent spiritually, and minimalist on an ethical level. So when you wonder why you have people being paid astronomical salaries on Wall Street and other areas of American life, especially the careerist, and why aren't they caring about others, where they could, they certainly are capable of understanding the other suffering, they're not going to and they haven't. That part of American history is over forever. They've made sure that if there was an extra seat in the lifeboat of life, it was taken out so that they could put a PlayStation in. You're standing there thinking, but don't I count? And they kind of look and say, well, where'd you go to school? How much money you got in the bank? Can you just call a broker on Wall Street? No, I'm sorry, I can't do any of that. Well, then there's no room in this boat for you. And they've got 100,000 people per hour waiting to get into their boat who can say, that's me, that's me. Yeah. We're breeding these people like cockroaches breed en masse. And they act just as lethal. Insensitivity to how they make their money and the consequences, you get a blowback, except we don't pay any attention to that. I dictated an article this morning. Some idiot, and I mean a complete idiot, made the mistake of writing a challenge to any of us who write about what's wrong with the medical establishment. I won't tell you what I dictated, but you can read it tomorrow. And this is what we have, those who defend the status quo without looking at the consequences of being a part of the status quo. If you can never challenge and deconstruct the illegitimacy of what you believe in, then how are you supposed to appreciate anyone else's legitimacy, anyone else's thoughts? So we not only do not teach people today about real life and how to deal with it and what to expect, and we're all going to go through loss, And how do we deal with grief? And how do we deal with loss? A job, a relationship? And what does it mean to have a meaningful life, a meaningful relationship? What do we have to commit? What ethos must we honor in order to assure there's some harmony and not just taking people and advantage of opportunity for granted until that day passes? And then we think, wow, what did I lose? Where was I at? You were distracted. So when I'm interviewing people, and I'll give you one example, and you're going to see this in one of the films. A woman is 63 years of age, too young to get Social Security. She doesn't have a pension. Her company that she worked for over 30 years was taken over in an equity partnership. These are the lowest life. These people, I cannot tell you the contempt I have for all, and I make no exception for hedge funds and equity partners and the people that work for them, from secretaries to the janitors. When you work in those environments, you're working in economic genocide environments. The whole purpose is to inflict suffering and pain by profiting off other people's long-term commitments to building a foundation that you found that you were smart enough to take advantage of and buy, and now you load it with debt and you fire them and you make their life go through hell. And there's about 30 million Americans who've been victims of that, so a small handful can live the lives of unimaginable and obscene wealth in greed and insecurity. But we don't have those conversations, not in school or anywhere else, because those parents are the ones who give endowments, and we don't want to threaten an endowment. That would make all the people on the national boards of these universities, from Harvard to Yale, have to have their own crying room. Someone just told the truth about one of our benefactors, and we're going to lose $100 million. Who do you actually think controls our art world and the stupid prices paid for mediocre work or crappy work by famous or living or dead people whose work isn't worth 5 cents and you would never hang it on a wall? And if you saw it on the street outside, you'd walk right by it. But suddenly someone pays $100 million for a bad Picasso. And yeah, he was a bad artist a lot of his life. And if he were alive today, he wouldn't be able to paint or exhibit anywhere how he treated women. But that's a separate issue. Let us not defile the reputations of the saints of any particular field, including art. So where exactly are people supposed to get this idea? And this woman says, so my son went to school, and of course he won and demanded to go to private school where his friends were going. So I said, okay. So I took a mortgage out of my home, and which had no mortgage. And then, lo and behold, I lose my job because they downsized. My son's at home. He's watching, you know, his computer all day. And when I ask him, can you go out and get a job? He says, well, I'm not going to be able to get a job in the field where I want, so I'm not going to make myself upset by working at something I don't like. But the mother is now bagging groceries in a store, making $8 an hour. And guess who is responsible for the monthly payments of a student loan? She is. She co-signed. And what about all that compounding interest? Now the loan is worth more to the people, including the federal government, than the value of her home. So she's underwater. So would you think that this person would see his mom going to work each day, knowing that she's saddled with his loan? That he would say, hey, this is stupid. I'll go out and get a job. I don't care what I have to do. You supported me. You raised me. You birthed me. I owe you that. No, never tell a millennial they owe anyone anything. They'll look at you and immediately have to go up on social media and unfriend you and then send out a tear that other people should immediately hug them on the internet because they've been made to feel bad. Wow. You think I'm kidding? Why don't you speak with Joe in my office? Ask him, how many times have we tried to hire people who wanted to show up when they wanted to, go home when they wanted to, and immediately be praised for not doing anything? He just had that conversation with me yesterday. So this is what the Max Planck Institute is saying. This is what now official social science is saying. Have you read about it? Have you heard it? Are there any conversations about it? Now, that's not everyone by any means. We must allow that there are some very conscientious and very, very decent human beings of all ages, from parents to their children. But they are not the majority. They're in the minority. Your thoughts on that? So I've given you three things to call in and talk about, including parents' lives made more miserable by the boomerang generation, returning home, London School of Economics. This is a separate study, but it also says, quote, adult children who return to live with their home cause a significant decline in parents' quality of life and well-being. And that means the parents are now having no privacy, are once again doing all the work, and getting little appreciation in the process. It's not a joint effort. You could understand that. All of us have or would open our homes to our siblings, our family members, any family member, our friends, if we saw that they were in dire straits. But at the very least, you expect is A, appreciation for the sacrifice you're making, because nothing in life is free, nothing. So when you do something, when you buy them food, when you give them pocket money, you had to earn that. It's free to them. It wasn't free to you. Do they show appreciation and say, hey, I really appreciate what you're doing. Thank you. Or do they just take it for granted? And at what point when you get taken for granted, do you say enough? Enough. You're old enough to do your own laundry, to make your own bed. Clean. You're living in a room for free. Please just keep it clean. The rest of the house is clean. Why can't you keep it? You're not 13 years old.
Oh, that's a bummer.
No, that's just being grown up. Oh, I forgot. That's something we're not allowed to use in the same conversation when discussing the little priests and priestesses of the millennial generation. So now the parents go through this suffering. Guilt and shame box ended them from saying, I'll help you go out and get a job. It may not be the job you want or qualify for, but at least it will allow you some income and enough to have some quality of life. No, that conversation is not going to happen. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, your turn. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. But before that, when we come back, we're going to go directly into this Utah says this young woman is a lawbreaker. Now, this tells you something about the mindset of people living in Utah and the people in the Mormon church running Utah. And just the insanity of this kind of stupidity. But I'll save that. You can hear for yourself.
This is Ashley. According to Utah, she's a lawbreaker. Now, life in Utah is already tough. We've suffered droughts and Michael Jordan and a drought of trophies caused by Michael Jordan. But life's tougher for Ashley because she has epilepsy, and the only medicine that stops her seizures is illegal here. Medical marijuana, also known by its scarier name, cannabis, which makes eating a plant sound like eating a human. When Ashley was a teenager, she started having seizures, sometimes over 20 a day. Each one can cause brain damage, exhaustion, and an increased chance of SUDEP, sudden unexpected death in epilepsy.
I've got this nagging terror in the back of my mind that I'm going to wake up one day and she's not going to be alive.
After a few years, all of Ashley's medicines had failed. Her father, Doug, a retired firefighter, was desperate. Then they went on a trip to Colorado for a firefighter gathering, which my girlfriend says sounds sexy. It's fine. We're fine. Cannabis is legal in Colorado, so Doug tried giving Ashley some small gummies of THC, the prime ingredient of cannabis. It worked like a miracle. Ashley's seizures stopped, going from dozens a day to a few a week, which is a big deal when your seizures can kill you, or you just don't like seizures. But when Doug and Ashley crossed back into Utah, they were lawbreakers. Cannabis can leave traces in your system for weeks. So if Ashley were tested during a hospital visit, the government could take her from her parents. So Ashley's family had a tough choice. Flee the state to get medicine, use it illegally here, or just suffer without it. So far, they've suffered without it, only using cannabis at the yearly firefighter gatherings, which my girlfriend wants to know the schedule of. Yet Utah's legislature refuses to make medical cannabis legal, even though 77% of Utahns believe it should be. That's a majority of both Republicans and Democrats, who don't agree on anything. Even no-brainers like the Utah Jazz and New Orleans Saints should switch names. Seriously, how has that not happened yet? Luckily, you can do something about this. If you want to help patients like Ashley, you can vote to legalize medical cannabis on Utah's next ballot. And remember, it's medical, not recreational. This marijuana can only be used for certain diseases, not for fun or great music. And if you care about this message, you can make sure this video is seen by about 1,000 more people by giving $25. Yeah, you could influence 1,000
Okay, just to give you an idea, what does it mean when a father and a mother could face losing their children to child care services because they did the right thing by helping save her life by using a drug that has been researched and published over 22,000 articles in the Library of Medicine on PubMed, the government's official site where it goes to qualify quality science? What does it tell you? If that were a state, I would move out of the damn state. I don't want to be around those kind of people where you can actually be punished for helping your child. And by the way, there's a case going on in New York that is just, in my opinion, criminal. And we should focus upon this judge who had no legal reason for not allowing the parents of this young boy who does not have cancer but is forced to take chemotherapy. I can provide that family, I can provide that judge with reams of peer-reviewed scientific literature showing that that chemotherapy will not help the child, will not prevent a recurrence, and actually is carcinogenic. So if anyone in this audience wants to get a hold of the judge, I'll send them literature because my literature, the literature we produce, can be upheld in a court of law. That child should not be taking chemotherapy. There are natural approaches to helping a person with leukemia or any other form of cancer regain their immune system. Now, before I take your calls, we're going to hear one more. We're going to hear Dr. Peter Bregan talk about what I consider one of the worst crimes in American history, the drugging of our children.
This is another in my simple truths about psychiatry. Now I want to talk to you about the overall catastrophe of approaching our children as if they need drugs and need diagnoses. We have a new cultural phenomenon. Children who walk through the halls of their schools may look around and see passing by them kids that are obviously drugged. Almost all young people know people who are on psychiatric drugs. 20% of our boys, at least in high school, have been diagnosed with ADHD and are being given drugs. A much larger percentage over time will be diagnosed and at least somebody will try to medicate them. What is this all about? Well, it's about the pharmaceutical industry going into cahoots with psychiatry and marketing drugs to teachers and parents to give to children. It's the most successful marketing campaign one could imagine. But what are the consequences morally and educationally for our society? They're a disaster. We now have parents believing that their children are incorrigible. Really, maybe 20-30% of our families or more thinking kids can't be normally raised, that they can't learn to discipline their kids, they can't learn to love their kids and yet manage them. All right. Then we have almost all of our teachers in America thinking that if they could just drug 1, 2, or 3 children in the class, that everything would be fine. And we have children growing up into adults who think they're defective and think they need psychiatric drugs. And then there's something even worse than that, which is what is happening when we follow up these children 25 and 30 years later, when they're in their 30s and their 40s. Well, we now have that data. My wife Ginger and I have been tracking through a series of articles that have been coming out. What happens to the ADHD boys? Just kids with mild hyperactivity started on Ritalin a few decades ago. Well, it's a disaster. They become, many of them, become career mental patients, taking multiple psychiatric drugs. We have very good studies showing that more of them become addicted to cocaine than ordinary kids who were never put on stimulant drugs, which are very similar to cocaine. They have more incarcerations, more mental hospitalizations, more suicidality. And the saddest truth, perhaps, they have, in many cases, shrinkage of the tissue of their brains, atrophy of their brains. I cover this material in the first half of Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal. I lay out why it is that we shouldn't have children and adults on psychiatric drugs. And in the second half of the book, I talk about how you can get off psychiatric drugs as safely and effectively as possible. We need to reverse this vast...
Yes, we do need to reverse. That's Dr. Peter Bregan, who's a medical doctor. He's a board-certified psychiatrist. He's previously worked at the National Institute of Health. He's a scholar. But more than anything, he's just an extraordinarily decent human being who could not go along with many of his colleagues in psychiatry when they started seeing normal behavior and saying that suddenly it was abnormal and was a brain chemical imbalance. He refused the biochemical rationale for labeling normal behavior as disease. And there are many more psychiatrists who are in that. I'm going to be doing a new documentary, and I've been working on it now for 5 years, and it's called Manufacturing Madness. I'm showing the entire history from Benjamin Russ forward of everything that's wrong, which is everything with our mental health field and how we go about diagnosing and treating people who are going through normal life situations and what we should do that is more humanistic to help them. I'm going to be taking calls in just a moment at 888-874-4888. Let me just mention that tonight on the Progressive Commentary, I'm going to be addressing in a very spiritual and positive way. The theme is towards a new spiritual ethic in our relationships with the planet and each other. We need positive insights. We need positive input. We need to show not some artificial hope in technology or the benevolence of someone coming forward who can create some miracle invention, because that's not going to happen. But there's a lot we can do to help our planet, to help each other, and regain a sense of our emotional and spiritual balance. Joining me will be Professor Per Epson Stoknes. He was part of our webinar, six-hour webinar, by the way, longest webinar I've ever done, and it was packed. There wasn't a wasted second or comment in 6 hours. You can go up to our website, perin.fm, and download any part of that webinar you want. And so he will be talking with me from Oslo, Norway, tonight, 7 p.m. on PRN.fm. You don't want to miss that program. Now, I want to play one more segment to give you a little bit more that you can call in and talk about. And this is something that really concerns all of us. When we take the strongest of wills and character, and Julian Assange is certainly in that group of people, and we do not defend them, we do not protect them. In fact, we sit by while our government and other governments prosecute them, and their only crime was exposing government crimes. This is WikiLeaks, and I'm only going to play part of it, and then we're going to go to your calls. And we have a lot of people calling in now, and any of the topics, the drawing of our children, what's wrong with our teaching, these are the things that I'm asking to call in on. The insanity of legislators willing to legislate that a parent has no right to try to protect in the child's health and would put the parents in jail and put the child in foster care. Wow, what a stupid group of legislators. Anyhow, let's hear about WikiLeaks reveals the real reason Julian Assange is being abandoned.
put our $500 million as the United States-controlled Inter-American Development Bank, $497 million after U.S. previously threatened to withhold funds over Julian Assange's asylum early this year. So this is how the United States gets Ecuador to buckle. So they go, we're just going to take your money away. We control the banks. We control trade in this hemisphere, and you know, look what they're doing to Venezuela. Look what they're doing right now to so that's what happens. So Goldman Sachs is going to now, so because they played along, they took away his internet. They're gonna hand him over pretty soon, and they gave him the $500 million. And you're not going to hear a peep about this from Chris Hayes, Rachel Maddow, Chris Cuomo, Anderson Cooper, Wolf Blitzer. You're not going to hear a peep about this. Oh, you know who else? Brian Seltzer over at Reliable Sources. He's not going to mention this. And if he's not going to mention this. I was going to say, well, if he does, he won't tell you. There's no way you can mention this without like telling you what it's about. So he's just not going to bring it up.
It's amazing the partisanship and the tribalism when it comes to someone like Julian Assange, who all of these liberals loved Julian Assange when he was exposing the war crimes with the Bush administration, and they just all abandon him just because he, you know, changed his politics. The journalism is still the same. So it's still crucial to protect him as a person.
And people forget why the corporate Democrats and the establishment hates Julian Assange. It was because he started telling the truth about Hillary Clinton. And that's what they're mad at him for, printing that stuff about him. Well, because people always, they go, well, Russia hacked our election. How? The way people think is that they got those emails. And what did those emails say? Those emails said that Hillary Clinton and the DNC rigged the primary election. That's how they rigged the election, by telling people they were cheating in the primary election. Because they always stop short of saying exactly what they did. And that's what WikiLeaks did. They printed those things. And people are making it look like they did it in a partisan way. Like they never printed any dirt on Donald Trump. You need dirt on Donald Trump? I mean, you got to be kidding me. The stuff he does in public is worse than any email you can. He doesn't use emails, by the way. So doesn't that tell you everything you need to know about the press, that they're not actually helping a guy who's probably the most important publisher in my generation?
I mean, the U.S. occupation of Iraq was going to continue if it wasn't for the WikiLeaks revelation, the collateral murder video. I mean, the U.S. was poised to go past the status of forces agreement. And, you know, it was only because of that major revelation that, you know, all of the Iraqi politicians, everyone in Iraq who is like, we'll accept some kind of extension of U.S. forces. When that video came out and it got out to the public, the huge scandal of how many war crimes were going unpunished and no accountability, they're like, we're going to start killing you the day you're here past the deadline. Because they're all being paid off anyway to stop fighting the U.S. But they're like, well, we'll take a paycheck to stop shooting at you is if you're out by this date. And the Obama administration, you know, they sent Robert Gates to Iraq right before that was supposed to end, because he was going to negotiate extending the status of forces agreement. And then that video came out. And then the Iraqis said, we're going to go back to killing all of you if you don't get out of here right now. Because it was because of Assange. So that in alone put that big price on his head. And so, of course, you know, not only did he destroy, you know, the Clinton's fantasy war, but then that Hillary's supposed to take the reins of. But then he, you know, did what
and
he did to Hillary.
And then
too.
He went on to reveal the secrets of how CIA spies on us. Mm-hmm. Right?
Vault 7. Yeah. Yep.
And so now, and so they've wanted to kill him even more. Mm-hmm. Right? The CIA wants him dead. Yeah. And the CIA, Bill Binney told me what he told Pompeo and Donald Trump was that your officers are lying to you. They're not giving you correct intelligence on purpose. Mm-hmm. And again, that doesn't get reported except for places like this, and people have no idea. They can't understand that there could be no good guys in a situation, that Donald Trump is maybe horrible, and Robert Mueller, also horrible. Hayden, also horrible. Mm-hmm. Brennan, also horrible. Like, you know, our intelligence community is horrible. They're a bunch of murdering torturers who overthrow democratically elected governments before breakfast. What's not to like? So, okay.
Yeah, it's disturbing how much the Trump administration has actually amped up the rhetoric against WikiLeaks, where you have Pompeo, all these people.
So that is confusing, right?
Yeah.
So why would they?
Because they want to prove themselves, I think, to the establishment and be like, no, we'll persecute Julian Assange if he comes here. We'll have his head, you know? Yeah. And that's really insane because, Trump on the campaign trail, as we were mentioning before, he was saying, I love WikiLeaks. I love these.
Right, yes. You know?
And so I think, just a show of force. So it's really scary what they're doing to Julian Assange, and it's really scary what Lenin Moreno is doing to Ecuador. He has.
You should see what Lenin Moreno is doing.
Oh yeah,
it's even worse. He's got cream in their face. Who is it?
The new president of Ecuador. Actually, Abby's twice interviewed the former president of Ecuador, Rafael Correa, who's the one that defended Assange and said, you can stay in our embassy and we're going to protect you. And then he endorsed this candidate. He didn't decide not to run for re-election, even though he was hugely popular. He endorsed this candidate, Lenin Moreno. And then soon after Moreno got elected, just a couple years ago, he showed to be really willing to get in bed with the U.S. and the CIA. And so that's why Assange is in so much danger now, because the popular government of Ecuador, which really turned it around from neoliberalism, was like, no, we're protecting this guy. He did something good.
And there's a lot of pressure that the United States and the CIA and our intelligence brings on a government like Ecuador. Yeah. I mean, I can't understand. I mean, look at this. They're going to bankrupt them and not give them funding they need. Mm-hmm. At $500 million a clip for a small country like that, it's a lot of money. So... wow, that's great. And so,
you've been listening to Jimmy Dore. I like Jimmy Dore, Shahid. I think that he has the courage and the intelligence to take on a lot of important progressive issues. That was Abby Martin, who was on with him. And Abby now has a permanent home on the Progressive Radio Network. She's been on Telesur. She was on RTV. She's been all over the place. And each one of these are getting closed down and losing their funding. Well, we're not closing down and we're not losing our funding, and there's no politics involved. It's just get the best possible minds who are progressive and give them a forum so they can reach this gigantic audience we have worldwide. By the way, we're going to go to your calls right now. I was just informed that, let me read it here so I make sure I'm saying it correctly, that since our audience, by the way, is worldwide, if anyone in the audience is... living near Bali, you could go to Bali and enjoy a film festival because we just won the two biggest awards for two different films, Saving the Planet One Bite at a Time, and also Plankos. Plankos won Best of Festival. Now, by the way, this International Film Festival represents Jakarta and Manila and that whole area of the world. So this will be shown over there. It'll be dubbed into their own languages. So we're very pleased that when two films, both taking top honors in one film festival, and so I can't be there. I'm filming nonstop. But if anyone lives in that area wants to attend, we'll give you credentials and you can go and spend a week enjoying the best films, international films in the world. We won best international films from around the world. So you'll be our guest. And when other festivals come up, we had just one in Venice, one in London, one in Berlin, one in Australia. We've been winning all over the world for our newest film. Just let us know, prnstudio@gmail.com, and we'll be back in touch with you so you can attend. Wear tux, go up on stage, accept the award. It'll be nice. Meet a lot of interesting people. Now let's go to our callers. We have a lot on the line now. We're going to start with Dan from New Jersey. Hi, Dan. Your turn. You're on the air.
Hi there, Gary. Before I make my comment on vaccines and the drugging of our children, I'd like to thank you for trumpeting the hideous treatment of Julian Assange, a true national hero. I've given both of your DVDs, the on vaccines and the drugging of our children, to two wonderful families who live near me. It's two sisters with four children each, and they live in the same house with their patriarch father. Wonderful families. They do everything for their children. They're not well-to-do, but they're middle class. And I've given the DVDs to them at least a year ago, and not once did they raise the subject. And not to be pushy, I would also talk to the sisters about the drugs, the vaccines that they're pushing on the daughters who are about 9 and 10 and the boy who's 10, and how this can be affecting their health. And in each instance, they will listen, but they make no comments. So I'm sure that this is out of a fear of the atmosphere in their area.
It is. There's one more film you could show them that might make a difference, because I did this film not so much from the victim's point of view, but rather from the science. It's called Deadly Deception. It's my newest film on showing that the vaccines that we're giving kids are neither safe nor effective by any metric of science. So Deadly Deception, that would be the latest one. Plus, we have four new articles, brand new articles. Jeff's up on PRN.fm on vaccines lacking safety and efficacy. So please send those in. And thank you, Dan, for caring enough about your friends and their children to make yourself feel uncomfortable, because it's not a nice position to be in emotionally when you're trying to help people open their minds to something that they could be very closed to out of fear, because there's substantial social punishment and a lot of shaming of people who challenge vaccines. So good for you. Tom from New York, your turn.
Gary, yes, I also want to thank you for saying the word about what's happening to Julian Assange, because it's I was actually going to mention that. But, you know, it's so weird and almost criminal that revealing horrors or crimes is a crime, but not the crimes themselves. But the reason I called in is because I have had opportunities to try to educate my stepson about misinformation that he's getting from school. And, for example, he brought home a propaganda piece about the dangers of marijuana. And I tried to get him to learn what was wrong with this piece. And my wife is like, oh, just leave him alone. He's trying to learn. I said, look, the piece was written in 1982. It's 2017. He's learning nonsense. And there's so many other examples that you can just buy any newspaper, any single newspaper, and almost every article is wrong, usually by errors of omission. So they talk about the North Korean nuclear weapons program. They fail to mention we have 5,000, or Israel has 100 or 200, and put Mordechai Vanunu in prison for 18 years just for disclosing the truth. So I'm trying to get people to understand most of what you're reading is wrong and misleading. And like when I'm educating people about the dangers of vaccines, they're like, oh no, there's no dangers, it's perfectly safe. And we tried it. You obviously are doing a great job with your documentaries, by the way, but people just don't want to think. And I was talking with a gentleman who was an Alzheimer's researcher. I said, well, of course you know about the work of Russell Blaylock and how aluminum is a neurotoxin. He's like, oh, Fred, that's nonsense, you know. And we're so being overloaded with neurotoxins like fluoride and aluminum and so forth that the media will not discuss this. They won't talk about how Alcoa is on the board of directors of the Alzheimer's Association. They will not cover geoengineering, by the way, and you should really have Dane Wigington on the air sometimes if you haven't already. But
I've had him on twice. I had Dane on twice.
I am planning a run across this country, not a run, a bike ride, to protest geoengineering, because it's absolutely fueling the fires out west, and nobody there will talk about it. And I've written again.
Tom, we're out of time for this. I want to get one more call in. Good for you for making the sacrifice to bike across country. I will help sponsor you. All right? I'll match anyone else that wants to come in and help you. I just want to see the literature you're giving out, because we have a lot on geoengineering, and you could give out DVDs, and my office will make those for free for you. We'll make 5,000 DVDs, so you can, or CDs, so you can give them out. But give a call. I commend you for your sacrifice and your willingness to get out of your comfort zone to do that. You have my support. We'll close out today with Sandy from New York. Hi, Sandy. It's your turn.
Gary, hi. Thank you. By the way, in the area of these children returning home, it's not just children, but it's also grandchildren. And many times these young people empty out the accounts of the elders and take over their homes so that the elders are usually put into either the smallest room or maybe even the garage, and I'm not exaggerating. This has happened in Florida to people. And, you know, this is an aftermath, Gary, of the parents being very passive in allowing their children to become, which is a very harsh word, but their children become parasites and strangers to the parents because the parents give them over to schools, to corporations, to television, to people who don't give a damn about these children's ethical, moral, and, you know, responsible upbringing. These drugs also, by the way, all these topics are so related, Gary. You can't separate them because there's no parental training whatsoever for people who want to have kids. How do they teach them, you know, any self-control if they haven't learned it themselves? How will the parents teach self-awareness and responsibility and love and respect for self and others? How to relate to others, for heaven's sake, when they don't know? So the concern is very big. And the drugging of our kids is as a, oh, my gosh, well, again, corpse, you know, against Big Pharma, you know, owning our kids. But we got to take them back. There's no other way. And everything is evidence, and everything is all related. It goes back to the very beginning of not being responsible parents to children who grew up to become people that we can't love very easily.
I really appreciate, Sandy, your insights. I think they're spot on. I believe that we must differentiate those parents who were very conscientious, did the best they could, fighting the establishment, fighting the curriculums, the teaching with some teachers, and also then the peer pressure, and then all that goes on in social media that a parent frequently is not fully aware of. And still, the kid turned out okay, and the parents should be commended. Those are the good outcomes. The trouble is the majority are not, and therefore we're stuck with what we have today. So thank you for bringing this to our attention and letting us ponder it. Everything starts by thinking deeply about an issue so we can come up with real solutions. I hope you all join me tonight at 7 o'clock for a spiritual road to helping our environment and each other. I'm Gary Knoll. Have a nice day, everyone.